So welcome to today's webinar, everybody. My name is Paul Dunay, and I'll be your host. Today's webinar is on harnessing the power of online networks, how to incentivize your online behavior that you need. And the webinar is brought to you today by Social Media Today and Adobe. So to join today's conversation, you can participate in two ways, either on Twitter using the hashtag SMTLive or via the GoToWebinar control panel. Today's speakers, Lauren Friedman, the Social Marketing Authority with Adobe, and she's a manager of their community engagement. Mark Kithcart, the CMO of Resonate Social, and they are a full-service digital agency in the San Francisco area. Rob Fujeda, the CEO of Zuberance, and the author of a groundbreaking new book called Brand Advocates, Turning Enthusiastic Customers into a Powerful Marketing Force. And yours truly, Paul Dunay, I am the Global VP of Marketing at Maximizer, a leader in cross-channel optimization. So Mark, Lauren, Mark, and Rob are going to show you some examples, an example or two, of how their clients are harnessing the power of online networks just to get us thinking. And as they go through these examples, please feel free to enter a question into Twitter or the GoToWebinar control panel. I'll be sure to pick it up and ask them once all the presentations are complete. So without further ado, I'm going to turn it over to Lauren Friedman, who's going to take us through some examples that she brought for us today. Lauren?
Hi, everyone. So I'm going to talk about harnessing the power of online networks and how to use content and communications to incentivize your customers to do what you want them to do. So content is still king. Nowadays, there are dozens of ways that brands incentivize their fans and followers on social media, from applications to giveaways to sweepstakes. However, I still believe that content is king when it comes to building relationships and truly incentivizing your online community in a very organic way. Incentives don't have to be monetary, and in fact, when they're not monetary, they may have a longer lasting effect. Earned is many times more valuable than paid. So what you say to your community influences online behavior. It's all in the content. Where are you linking? Where are you telling your fans and followers to go? Why should they trust you? Have you taken the time to build that relationship before asking them to do something? And are you sharing photos that are engaging and have the potential to incentivize a certain behavior? I'll go through a few examples. On the next slide, we have Safeway, who is targeting their core audience with relevant content. Here, Safeway has used the Adobe Social platform to publish their content. First, this piece of content is highly relevant and timely. After all, it was National Chocolate Brownie Day. The content is based on food, and this type of content is really valuable for the Safeway customer as they've taken the time to define their target audience. They know who their shoppers are. They know who are participating on their social networks. There's a link to the recipe. If you see the arrow on the right-hand side, there's a link to the recipe for these brownies, including the ingredients that can be purchased at Safeway. So clearly, that's the incentive. And then last, there's an engaging photo of some delicious-looking brownies. So what behavior is this incentivizing? Do these brownies look good to you? If so, click on that recipe, and you'll get a whole shopping list of ingredients you can find at your local Safeway. So by creating content that is timely and relevant and engaging and includes a photo, an image, pleasing imagery like that is incentivizing the ultimate behavior that Safeway really wants, which is people buying products from their stores. And next, we have Hyatt, specifically the Ondaz brand that's under the Hyatt umbrella that is incentivizing users to share content. So this photo came from an Instagram user who shared the photo to Ondaz and tagged that brand, and Ondaz then shared it to their 41,000 fans while giving that Instagrammer credit for the photo. So that's definitely incentive for the fan base to be participating in the conversation. The copy is engaging and descriptive of the photo below. And again, this is not a monetary incentive. All a user has to do is share their content in a way that's searchable for the brand, and Ondaz is sharing it with their fan base. So this is showing customers that the brand is listening and does appreciate the sharing of experiences at Ondaz, which is the ultimate goal. When it comes to hotels, everyone is asking for recommendations on where to stay. And when they see the positive experience of a friend organically shared, that goal is met. So word of mouth and share of voice on online networks is very valuable, so Hyatt and Ondaz can stay top of mind. So why should I talk to you? What do I get out of joining your community? One of the biggest mistakes a brand can make when using social media is thinking it's just another place where they can post their advertisements or commercials or circulars. Social media is a two-way communication channel, and it needs to be treated that way. So creating an exclusive community, creating a sense of exclusivity. What can your customers get from you on Facebook or on Twitter or on Pinterest or on Instagram that they couldn't get anywhere else? Do they get deals? Do they get advanced notice of sales? Do they get information about products that they couldn't find somewhere else? Are customer service questions answered more efficiently on social media? Give them something that they can't get anywhere else. Knowing your audience is a good place to start when determining how to cultivate your community. So you can start by analyzing your customer base, but you're really going to have to engage with your online networks in order to learn the most about what they like and what they want from you. I know it sounds really elementary, but if you don't know what your fans or followers want, ask them. Trust me, they'll tell you what they want from you, and then it's up to you to give them what they want. So remember, social media is not traditional marketing. It's a two-way conversation, and if you want something from them, you have to give them something they want. Now, of course, incentives can be risky business. When it comes to online communities, quality is always better than quantity. Many brands lurch into the social space and just want to drive fan or follower acquisition. They just want a million fans. They want a million followers. So they give something free away and get a lot of people coming to their pages who just want that free stuff, that don't necessarily care about the actual brand, who the brand is, and they're not looking for a long-term relationship. So if you've gone that route and you've acquired all of these fans, what's next? It's not too late. You can still engage the community that's meaningful for both you and for them. And if you haven't gone the blind acquisition route, you can keep your fans engaged and continue to allow the community to grow organically. So thank you for listening to me today. If you want more information, you can always find me on Twitter at @Lauren_Hanna and at Adobe Social.
Great, Lauren. Thank you so much. It prompted a lot of good questions, so way to go on that one. I appreciate it. Let's turn it over to Mark, who's going to take us through a couple of examples, too. Mark?
All right, great. Thanks. I'm having a little bit of photo envy from Lauren's presentation. She had great photos, especially the one of Tom Cruise, and I'm wondering if most of the people on the call here can even remember that that show, the movie that Tom was in when he did that. But I'm going to be talking a little bit about a different type of network, a different type of community, and a little bit different type of online engagement. So Lauren was talking a lot about, especially engaging in social media. I'm talking about some internal communities as well as some external communities that are somewhat closed. And there's a lot of folks that end up doing it wrong. I discovered this, and I discovered in a couple of different ways. Number one, through trial and error. And number two, I went to a presentation where we had the community manager of Zappos, as well as the community manager for Guest Satisfaction. And the title of their talk was How You Are Killing Your Community. And not only did we do most of that stuff wrong, I see that a lot of people do as well. As you're building community, there's things that you're doing that can potentially derail the community that you're trying to build. And then I'll talk about incentives and ways to support building that community and lifting up the people that are actually the members of the community so they can really be the ones that are building it for you rather than you building it on your own. So doing it wrong, what's that look like and what does it mean to build it wrong? And I know that Rob is probably going to have some things to offer as well on the offering incentives piece, and I know Lauren touched on it as well, and that is Offering incentives can definitely be a wrong way to build your community. Too many incentives, especially monetary incentives, don't work, as you heard earlier from Lauren, and I agree with that. But there are incentives that do work, and I'll get to those in a minute. Being too welcoming, we started a community for educators. And the first thing we did is we wanted to welcome every new person because we wanted them to be happy and feel welcome. Don't do that. Let the community grow. Let the community be what it is. They may receive one email saying, hey, you're part of the community. Go ahead and participate. But that's it. Let the people participate on the level they want to participate on. Also, a large number of your community members are what are called lurkers. They're going to look around and they're going to watch before they participate. They want to understand what's the vibe of the community and how's it working. And if it's somebody who's, if the owner of the community is over-moderating, being too involved, being too welcoming, what's going to happen is that lurker will potentially just continue to lurk and not get engaged. But if they see other members of the community that came to that community to be a part of it, starting to allow their own engagement, the natural organic engagement that can occur in a community, those lurkers will then want to participate when subject matter comes up that appeals to them. And again, this spills right into the next one and the next one. Not letting the community grow on its own, being too helpful and smart. And let me touch on these two briefly. Always diving in first. Again, you know, you've got people that hey, I want to see my community thrive, or I started an internal community on my intranet at work, or I started this community address a certain thing that I want to do, that I'm interested in. But what you end up doing is being diving in, being too helpful. You know, every time somebody has a question, every time somebody says something, you're the first one to reply. And then having an answer for everything. And again, let the community grow on its own. Let it be organic. Let it be natural. But then there's also the flip side of this, and that's the disruptors. If there are disruptors in a community, one thing you can't do is let that continue. So there's a certain extent of organic growth and organic community that you can allow, and then there's also that fine line where you've got to watch out for the disruptors that can potentially ruin it for everyone else. So it's a very fine line that you walk when building community. Most do it wrong. And I say that only from my own experience of doing all of these things in the beginning, and then understanding that, you know, boy, the community that we're building here is not working and why. Let's go to the next slide, please. Okay, what do we do? How do we do it right, and how do we incentivize in the right ways to get community and online community participation? Badging is a big one. Offering people badges of different types allows a person to also not only strive for the badge, but then also feel more inclined to participate. There's a couple of companies and a couple of online communities that do this extremely well. SEOmoz.org is one that does this great. When you answer enough questions, it allows you to get points, okay? These points allow you also to climb in what I would call badge or rank level. And that's also ranking levels is the third one down here. And what that does is it lets other people, number one, know that, hey, you know what, this person is engaged in the community, number one. Number two, they've been answering questions and getting, you know, a certain kind of points for it, so the gamification piece as well. And these points mean that somebody actually accepted this as the right answer, and they were able to get these points. So meaning you're able to kind of rank up or level up. No money involved, but definitely there's a little bit of prestige. Warrior Forum also does this. The Warrior Forum is a place where you can, again, not only have that ranking to where you can get to certain levels, you know, hyperactive warrior, master warrior, advanced warrior, etc., but then also it shows how many times you've commented. And this is the key, how many times you've been thanked by others. And you know, it's not so much, you know, one of these things where you're thinking, gosh, you know, I really want to get thanked. It's more about providing good, solid information that's relevant, on topic, and helps someone. Obviously, you're going to get a thank for that. But I'll tell you, when I first joined that community, I wanted to get thanks. I wanted people thanking me for giving good, solid information. And, it's that mindset of, you know, incentivizing people in a way. It's like, you know what, I want some thanks. That person has some. Or, gosh, you know what, they gotten to this level of hyperactive warrior. How do you get there? So you got to show them, you know, what are the levels? How do you get there? And obviously, it's going to have to be very much rewards based, meaning you gave good value, therefore we're gonna give you a decent bump in rank or standing. One thing I do want to throw out, though, and this is where I think Rob might have take a little bit of exception to what we're talking about. I don't personally do this, but it was interesting because on SEOmoz.org, after you answer a certain number of questions and you get to a certain level in SEOmoz and accumulate a certain number of points, those points can be transferred into paying for a month or a couple of months of your membership for SEOmoz. And the cost for that, and I don't work for SEOmoz or anything, but the cost for that range from anywhere from $99 a month on up. So some people go in there and they'll actually answer these questions so they can get free membership to the SEOmoz tools. So anyways, it's interesting because it's not money exchanging hands, but there's definitely inherent value in answering the questions, and there can even be value translated through getting a free month or a few free months with that organization. You know, and I guess the biggest question I would have around that, and I don't have these numbers, but would be, you know, how many people actually attain that level? Is it 5% or 2% or whatever? It may be a very small percentage and not that many people go for it. I really honestly believe that more people are probably there to participate and give good value. And one thing I will say, that online community is robust and filled with extremely talented people. Promote Within. So one thing that we did notice as we started building community around the educator group was we wanted to start promoting from within and letting some of those folks that were participating the most become very low-level moderators. So folks that could actually be a part of the community and help moderate the community. So what's better than a community being moderated by the people who are actually using it and grew up in it? So that also helps. And obviously, when somebody gets promoted to that level of moderator in a community, they feel that they've got, you know, the right and the authority, et cetera. You give them, again, this is kind of a stepped process. You don't give them full rein, but you do give them the ability to do some moderation and maybe even kick it back to the main moderator, especially if you've got a disruptor, et cetera, and handling those things in the right way. Encouraging engagement through tools. This is a key piece. When we started building community, one thing we wanted to do is make it a stepped process, meaning get somebody to take a little bit of action, you know, and stop lurking, and then maybe get involved at a deeper level. A company that I look for, it's called Collaborize Classroom, and it's a product made for teachers. But what we wanted to do is, and we use this in various verticals, so not only in nonprofits, but also in corporations for internal communications, et cetera. And one thing we wanted to do was create an engagement piece that enabled people to go ahead and engage at a very low level to begin with. And so we created some structure around some questions, yes, no, multiple choice, et cetera, so we could get that initial participation. And then what they could do is if they wanted to go below and add a comment, they could. So what we found is once people participated on that very low level, just saying yes or no, or just choosing multiple choice answer, or any of the different question structures that were created around a specific online community question or topic, we found that people tended to engage more once they got through that first step. Then they started replying and commenting and getting engaged. So we felt that just taking that step level and getting that first initial engagement was the way to go. And then the last thing that I believe, and I know that Rob has several more ways to incentivize folks in online communities, and I'm looking forward to hearing him speak, but one is conveying gratitude as a back channel. We use this in many different ways, and letting those know that they're doing a fantastic job, and conveying that through maybe social channels or you know, directly through email or what have you, always seem to work great. And then the last thing I just want to touch on is around the badging and gamification again. You know, some other companies that have used this beautifully, and one in particular is eBay. They use badging, and the badging at eBay conveys authority, reputation, and security for any buyer, especially if it's a power seller or something along those lines. It's kind of like the Better Business Bureau sticker on a store, or, you know, a Zagat rating or a J.D. Powers rating or something like that. So I believe those things still do count and still do wield authority when doing it right and incentivizing folks. Next slide.
Great. Yeah, no, great. Thank you very much. Yeah, thank you very much, Mark. We're going to turn it over to Rob, who's going to talk a little bit about brand advocates. We've got tons of questions for you guys, so I think we'll have a healthy debate. So, Rob, can you take it away?
Sure enough, Paul. Hi, everyone. Great stuff, Lauren and Mark. And I guess I'm going to sort of close out the, you know, prepared content part of this before we get to the questions. And agree with a lot of what's been said so far, and I think that, you know, the topic of brand advocates has suddenly become very hot. Everybody's talking about brand advocates, and there is some disagreement about what is a brand advocate, so what I thought I would start here. This is a definition. This is the Zubrin's definition of a brand advocate. A highly satisfied customer or other person who recommends brands or products, importantly without pay or incentives. And so, you know, there's been a lot of research about advocate motivations, and here are the now off the speakerphone. The number one motivation for a brand advocate is they're going to recommend not because they're being paid or they're getting rewards, but because they've had a great experience with a product or service, or they want to help their friends. And if you think about it, you know, you have probably already recommended things like restaurants, books, movies, other categories of products, and those restaurants or those theaters haven't paid you for those recommendations. It's just that you've had a great experience, and you wanted to let your friends know, and that happens, according to Keller Faye, 3.5 billion times every day, each and every day, advocates are recommending brands and products, and they're not being paid for it. We can go to the next slide now and take a look at a real advocate, and thought I would just present this to you because I love sort of personalizing the story and giving you a real example. So say hello to Justin Dorfman. He is an advocate for the company CDW, an online computer retailer. And I interviewed Justin for my book. And Justin, through his recommendations of CDW, has generated over $400,000 in sales for CDW. And CDW hasn't paid Justin anything. They haven't given him any money, any you know, T-shirts, badges, hats, or anything like that. So I asked Justin, so why do you recommend CDW if you're not getting anything out of it personally? And he said, you know, I just have had such a great experience with that company. Their service is stellar. I'm even on a first name basis with my account rep at CDW. We know each other by, we're connected on Facebook. You know, I consider him a friend, and they've never let me down. Now, what's interesting about Justin Dorfman is that he is not part of some sort of lunatic brand fringe. You know, he's not in the 1, 5, or even 10%. In fact, according to the surveys that we've conducted, 81% of surveyed CD customers are just like Justin. They go out of their way to recommend CDW to their friends. So clearly, you don't have to pay or provide incentives to authentic advocates like Justin Dorfman. You just have to make it easy for them to recommend. If you go to the next slide, we'll take a look at some of the ways that, a brand called Rubio's is energizing its advocates. Now, all of this is free. I do want to underline this, that none of Rubio's advocates are getting anything free. So Rubio's is in the fast casual category. They are famous for their fish tacos and very popular in California and the western part of the U.S. And through their ongoing advocate program, they have generated tens of thousands of pieces of advocate content in the form of very positive stories and reviews. Over 50,000 advocates have also shared offers for Rubio's with their social networks. And so there have been over 100,000 free recommendations for Rubio's. And Rubio's hasn't paid a penny for these recommendations. They haven't given anyone any free tacos, no free burritos or anything like that. They're simply tapping into the authentic enthusiasm of Rubio's customers and advocates. And I would suggest for everybody on the webinar today, you can do the same. And you don't have to provide incentives to do this. I think we go to the next slide. So then we do get the question, so what are some of the, legitimate ways to reward advocates? And here are 10 of them, and I have this in my book, and none of these involve paying or giving, rewards to people, in exchange for or as a quid pro quo. In other words, no one is saying, if you write me a positive review, I'll give you something. But it is, I think, entirely legitimate and appropriate to treat your advocates better or different than other customers because they are truly your best customers and your most valuable customers. And so there are 10 ways, and I'll give you just one way of these 10, and that is to give advocates sneak peeks to things like new products or new services or even, new campaigns, new marketing campaigns or new videos. Anything that you are going to make available generally, you can make available to your advocates early. And that gives them, the feeling that they're special or different, and they truly are. And so that doesn't involve giving them anything monetarily or any kind of financial incentives, but it is about treating them special. All of those are, all 10 of these ways are ways that you can thank advocates and make them feel special without paying them or giving them financial incentives. And I think there's just one final slide here that may be it. Maybe that's the end of the slides. Okay. Oh, yeah. And exactly. So here's some final examples of how to reward advocates. And here are three examples from three different companies. So restaurant.com, which sells restaurant gift certificates on the Internet, has created a special community for their advocates on Facebook. And so they're treating their advocates special or different by creating an advocate community. Rubio's, who I spoke of a moment ago, is involving their advocates in special causes. And so one of those causes was involving their advocates on World Ocean Day, where Rubio's invited its advocates to stand up for the ocean. And then lastly, two words that never go out of style, thank you. And so the marketing team at Brick Bodies, a health and fitness club, is thanking its advocates simply by just saying that, thanking them for their ongoing recommendations and telling friends, family, and others about Brick Bodies. So here are three ways, and again, many others, ways to reward advocates without paying them or incentivizing them.
Great. Thank you very much, Rob.
It's back to you, Paul.
Yeah, no worries. I wanted to put in a plug for your book, which I bought, and I'm in the middle of reading. So thank you very much. It also inspired us to get you on today's call. So for those of you out there, the Brand Advocates book that Rob just wrote is appearing now on the slide. So, Rob, when you talked about the sneak peek, I had an example that I wanted to chip in here because you reminded me of something when I was at Avaya that we did. In the rollout of a new video product, naturally we were doing a press release and briefings for press and analysts and having an event. And I really felt strongly that we were communicating with a bunch of Twitter folks who were, advocating for the product and that we should invite them to this particular event and managed to convince the powers that be that we should do that. And we did. And boy, those attendees tweeted up a storm about how wonderful the product was and how they wanted to be the first to get it, and they eventually did, right? So it was not just a good social behavior, but it also closed the loop and became a sale. So, you know, sometimes that sneak peek can really work for you. So thanks for reminding me about that one. Another thing that came up in the Twitter feed, I think the Twitter feed was ablaze when Mark was talking about lurkers, and it reminded me, Mark, of that that rule, and I don't know who coined it. It's sort of this 1-9-90 rule, and I wondered if you could go into that and maybe explain that as far as how people participate. Mark?
Sure, absolutely, Paul. The 1-9-90 rule. 1% of your users are going to participate a lot, and they account for most of the contributions made to communities. 9% are going to communicate from time to time, and then 90% of those are going to be lurkers. They're going to read and observe, but they won't contribute. I talked a little bit about a couple of different ways that you can get that contribution or get that, try to move that 90% over to the, and expand that 9% and even expand the 1% from where it is. And just as an aside, I just want to say this, causes on Facebook, it seems that nonprofits and those that are looking, nonprofits and charities tend to have even a smaller percentage. I think the number that has most recently been thrown around is 0.7% actually contribute to the conversation, whereas you have even more lurkers and more that contribute less. But just kind of an interesting aside. But some of the things that you can do to help move people from the 90 and the 9 over, you know, higher to the 1% and increase to 9% is just making it easier to contribute. You know, and I did talk about one way to get that contribution, and that is in a small step process. There's a new technology that just came out called widgets. It's W-E-J-I-T. I think it's mywidget.com. And what those widgets do is they enable that first bit of engagement, meaning yes, no, multiple choice. You know, it's kind of a portable unit that can move throughout social networks, blogs, and websites. And what it enables people to do, again, is just take that first step. Do you have a stand on this? You know, yes, no, or choose one of these multiple choice examples. And one thing we found is that once people participated at that level, this very small, somewhat non-committal level, just, you know, I'm just going to click yes. It's very simple. It's very easy, and it's very quick. It's not like you have to formulate a big, massive answer. What we found is then once people click yes, they said, well, you know what, I kind of need to justify why I clicked yes. And they go ahead in and they'll go down below and they'll go ahead and put in a comment. And what happens is then you see that person get more engaged. They it's kind of broken that ice, and it enables that person to contribute at a higher level. I'm not going to make this much longer, but you know, a lot of those incentives that not only Rob talked about and I talked about before can also support that, you know, especially when people want to get to, you know, that next level, or, you know, getting those thank yous on that community, no matter where it is, or getting those likes on Facebook, you know, it's gonna increase that participation level.
Yeah. No, thank you, Mark. And I looked that technology up that you mentioned, mywidget.com, and I actually posted it to Twitter for those of you that are interested. It looks kind of interesting, so thank you for that. Before we continue, I've noticed a couple of questions in the control panel, namely one from Madeline Malini, who wanted us to define community a little bit better. So, Lauren, maybe this one is for you. She's asking, is a Facebook or Twitter, could that be a community, or are you talking about something bigger or broader? So, Lauren, you want to take a shot at that?
Yeah, sure. So, in general, we define a community as people that are connecting over similar interests. So it can absolutely be a Facebook page, a Twitter account, a LinkedIn group, et cetera. It's people that are communicating and connecting over similar interests. And, you know, that's really where you get into knowing your audience and knowing what they're interested in so that you can help cultivate that community. The strongest communities are really the communities where people are talking to each other and they're bonding over these similar interests, whether they like a band or whether they like a restaurant or a type of food or a brand, they're really talking to each other and facilitating a lot of that conversation. And the best way to be successful with cultivating that community is interacting and engaging with them in a very organic and natural way that's really, you know, hey, you like to travel. Well, we're Expedia, and we're going to help, you know, you plan your next trip and decide where you want to go and how you want to get there and what you want to see and where you want to eat, et cetera. So being really a member of that community instead of, you know, necessarily a leader of that community, although, you know, with brands tend to be the leaders of their own communities. But the best way is to really connect the people to each other, and then your community really builds itself.
Okay. So we're talking about communities that could be a Twitter handle, it could be a hashtag, it could be a Facebook page, it could be something more formal, you know, a vibrant community, a community software kind of a community as well. You know, now that we've got that out of the way, there's a lot of questions about, you know, does building community work for any industry and business size, from Rebecca Burns in the GoToWebinar control panel. I wondered if Lauren or Rob or Mark, you wanted to comment about, hey, does size matter in communities?
I can certainly chime in first, but guys, feel free to jump in. I think that there are communities of any and all sizes that, you know, some of the biggest communities tend to lose their core message and have to be reminded of, you know, why they're there and what the community is about. And some of the smallest communities can really be the most powerful, depending on, you know, advocates and influence. So I don't think size matters.
Okay.
Mark, I totally agree with Lauren. Thanks, Paul. I totally agree with Lauren. And I'll give you some examples. The Warrior Forum. At any given time in the day, there's literally thousands of people on that forum. They have it broken down into various categories, so you can select the area you want to go to. And it's still a very powerful community. You know, tens and tens of thousands of people go there every day and spend time on that site. But as Lauren points out, even the small ones, I mean, I even see, communities, where it's a board of directors, and they choose to not just communicate by email, but they choose to pull together a wiki, or they choose to pull together a private online community of some kind. As Lauren points out, those can be extremely powerful. One thing you don't want is a reply-all email to everyone. Every time somebody has a question, and guess what? Now your email becomes unwieldy, and I'm sure we've all been, you know, caught up in that before. So moving that type of a conversation and that type of a brain trust, I guess you could say, to an online community is probably the perfect thing to do. And as Lauren points out, those can be extremely strong and can grow. So I agree. Large or small, you can make it happen.
Yeah. Rob, any specific flood level that you've seen that works maybe better than others? You know, maybe with Rubio or something, was there a certain number that they had that made the magic really open up?
Well, I think it just depends on what your marketing objectives are and the size of your target audience. You know, we've seen we've seen large communities like Rubio's where they have more than 75,000 advocates. Restaurant.com has over 250,000 advocates. And then we've seen smaller communities of, you know, 5,000 to 10,000 members of an advocate community that are, you know, generating referral leads and sales and creating very positive content. So it really depends on your marketing objectives and the size of your target market. But, you know, you can have a small community that's highly energized and very influential and can definitely move the marketing dial for you.
Yeah, and I'm going to take the contrarian point on this, guys. I'm going to say, you know, a Facebook fan page with, you know, a couple hundred people, 193 people, let's say, it's hard to get a conversation going on that. I think that's where that question's coming from. And so, you know, building that to 1,000 or so, it starts to get a little bit easier specifically on a Facebook page. And excuse me, because I've written a few books on Facebook, so I tend to think about communities in that sort of sense. You know, you got to expect that 10% of your total base might be listening at any given point, and you know, 10% of 100 is pretty small, right? And to get a conversation going there. The other point is, I've seen, you know, small Yammer communities, let's say, you know, Yammer, which is in an intra-organization type of Twitter, work effectively with, a couple dozen people because they're all wired and, really want to contribute. So I guess size could matter in some instances, but not in others. Another bunch of questions around, starting from scratch. I got one from J.R. Reed in the control panel about how do you build an audience if you're starting from scratch. Any sort of thoughts there on liftoff, Rob, or Mark or Lauren? How do you get liftoff?
Well, in terms of how do you start building a group of advocates, is that the question?
Yeah, how would you do it, from scratch? You got to start someplace. First, there's got to be some person has to be the first one in. What's the best way to get that person in and get others following?
Yeah, and I should also say that at Zuberance, we don't really host or manage online communities in sort of the traditional sense. The communities of advocates that we get involved with are really sort of virtual communities. In other words, these advocates don't necessarily have to go to a specific URL to be able to recommend the brand or product. It sort of happens in the wild. We find advocates wherever they are and give them the tools and the applications to create content and share that content with their friends and on places like shopping sites. So we're not sort of a traditional community player. But we do definitely help brands build their, what we call their advocate army. And the principal way that we do that, and a recommendation that I would make to everyone listening, so it's fairly simple, really, and easy, and that is to ask the ultimate question for customer or brand loyalty. And this comes from Net Promoter, and that question is, on a scale of 0 to 10, how likely are you to recommend our brand or product? And those respondents who say 9 or 10 are considered promoters in Net Promoter lingo, or advocates as we call them. So an easy way to get started, to build your advocate army and identify your customers and others who are likely to recommend you, is to ask that ultimate question for customer loyalty and ask it everywhere across multiple communications channels and customer touch points. And that's a fast and easy way to get started, to start identifying your advocates and building your advocate army.
And I think to that point too, Rob, I think that it's also about leveraging the advocates that you may already have and the communities that you may already have existing elsewhere off of social media. So it's, do you have an email list that you send out, sales or deals or coupons or newsletters, et cetera, and is this social network that you are trying to get off the ground is creating awareness through the other channels that are already pre-existing too, so that you can get some of the folks that may not necessarily know you're on social media, but that are following what you're doing, that are customers of yours offline, to really start that community as well.
Right, Mark, any thoughts?
Yeah, one came to mind, and both great comments there by Lauren and Robert. We were doing some work for HP, and it was launching a new product. And one way that we were able to pull together advocates is obviously giving those advocates the new device, letting them borrow it, letting them use it, letting them get engaged with it. So, that can be a double-edged sword, of course, meaning they might not like it, but, you try to test that in the beginning. But obviously those folks are using it, and they're excited about it, and they'll be advocates for you. So whatever product it is you have, if this works in your scenario, of course, it has to be the perfect scenario for you to work. But from the standpoint of, do you have a product, and can you get that product in a person's hands and let them sample it, try it, test it, and so on, and let them let them be the decider, let them get engaged with it, and let them go ahead and then take it from there.
Yeah, great. Thank you very much. Okay, some questions on tools, and now we're almost crossing into going from advocate almost into the influencer range with this particular question from Anna Bennett, but what's the easiest listening tool to determine who your top advocates are? So, Rob, maybe you want to field that, and we'll go down the line.
Yeah, so there are, I think Forrester says there are about...
OK, okay. Maybe, Lauren, maybe you want to touch that one?
Yeah, sure. Adobe Social, shameless plug over here too, but Adobe Social has a listening tool as well that also identifies sentiment analysis and influencers, so who's participating in the conversation in a valuable way with positive sentiment that has not only the most followers, because we actually don't think that influence is dependent on the number of followers you have on Twitter or fans that you have on Facebook, et cetera. It's really more about defining what you're adding to the conversation and how you're adding value and spreading the word. So someone with, 100 followers on Twitter could have more influence than someone with 10,000 followers on Twitter, depending on the kinds of conversations that they're leading and, what value they're adding. So within Adobe Social and the social analytics integration into the Adobe Social tool, we can track all of that, all of the conversations that are taking place, provide a sentiment score on, what percentage are positive versus neutral versus negative, and then pull out the biggest participators in that conversation and really give you kind of a bird's eye view of how they're engaging their audience about your brand.
Yeah. Mark, any thoughts on identifying using tools?
Yeah, so, Lauren is on the side of, I think that's a fantastic listening tool, by the way, and sentiment analysis tool. I'm going to go a little bit lower tech, I guess you could say. And, sometimes what I'll do is I'll just go to the normal places. I'll just hit Twitter and utilizing TweetDeck or Hootsuite, go ahead and do some searches in areas that that makes sense to me. So I'm speaking to the folks that are maybe working with a tight budget. And then I'll also run some of that information by clout. Not what is their clout score, but more, how is their network influence? Now I know some people love clout and other people hate it, but it is at least a metric of some type and I can dig in deeper. So, kind of going a little low tech, there are a lot of obviously high tech tools out there that do sentiment analysis and listening. But, if you're on a tight budget, TweetDeck, Hootsuite, Clout, those are three that I go to if in need, and I don't have that larger, more sophisticated tool.
Yeah, and just listening to, the answers that we provided, it's almost like we're toggling back and forth and using advocate and influencer, in the same breath. I'd like to sort of draw a delineation there, at least the way that I think about it here at Maximizer, which is, we talk to influencers who we believe are people in the press who may talk about, our solution or someone else's solution interchangeably, but they'll probably talk about us favorably, and we want to, get to those press or those analysts. So they're influential in the sense that we want to get them and have them talk about us, as opposed to advocates, which are most likely an end customer who maybe tweets a lot in a positive sense, right? So that's where Lauren's sentiment comes in really nicely, to make sure that, we can harness them, maybe give them a sneak peek of something. So, drawing a delineation in your mind between how you think of an influencer and advocate, might also help. Rob, I see you're back. Did you want to finish off your answer on that one?
Yeah, sure, Paul. I'm sorry, I'm not sure where exactly you guys lost me, but I was just saying that there are, dozens of tools out there for listening, and the key thing is being able to identify the advocate in a way that you can have ongoing communication with them. And so I was mentioning an approach that we use at Zuberance, and the idea that if someone tweets positively, we can identify and engage that advocate. And I think to the earlier comment, the idea is to find advocates wherever they are, whether they're tweeting positively, whether they're posting on Facebook, whether they're writing positive reviews, and further engage them, because they're giving you an indication that they really do love you and you really want to be able to engage them so you can continually enable them to share that love.
Okay. Well, I've got a question that's going to push us all. So, put on your seatbelts for this one. Carolyn Engelar said, and I quote, "This advice is helpful, but it doesn't really speak to the companies that might not have a large enough customer base yet to find those advocates. Is it possible to give more advice on the first steps for liftoff or, engendering that kind of community?" So I'm going to ask each of you to go down the line. How would you address Carolyn? Give her one tip on how to just get started. How do you get your toe in the water rather than your ass in the pool? Go.
I mean, I think I would go just go back to what I said earlier, and that is no matter whether your company is a mom and pop or GMC, the same thing applies. The very first thing you want to do is identify your advocates. And an easy way to do that is to ask the ultimate question for customer loyalty, how likely are you to recommend us? And it's not hard to do that. You can send out an email to your customers and ask them that question. And so that's a way to get your toe in the water. And that's what I would recommend to get started with.
Okay, so sending out an email, would you, you know, be willing to recommend us, yes, no, or the scale of, you know, 1 to 10, like, you know, that you've seen before, that's a possibility, and getting that back and starting with a couple few people who said yes, right? That's the beginning of your advocate base. Good point.
Yeah.
Mark or Lauren, want to take a shot at that one?
Yeah. So, Paul, this is Mark. Yep. You know, we working with the company, we started a brand. It was brand new product, and now we're going to get into the debate of influencer and advocate, I guess. And one thing we did do, though, to get our new product, our brand off the ground, is we did have to identify influencers in that target arena, in that target vertical first. We needed to know who they were. Then what we did is we reached out to them individually. We wanted them to try the product, and then we got them engaged in the process of helping us make our product better. So we didn't assume, hey, our product's finished and you guys should just use it and it's great. We said, you know what? We see you as a person who is really engaged in this activity. And what we'd love to do is get your feedback on something we're doing right now, and we think it's going to make your job easier. It's going to solve a pain point for you. And what they did is we those influencers then became advocates for us because they felt they had a stake in the game. So that's one way we did it. One example.
Great. Lauren?
Yeah, I would say that with a lot of our customers, you know, they start pretty small too. But one of a good way to help build acquisition in an organic way is to use, you know, Facebook sponsored stories and Twitter's promoted tweets, so that it's still very content focused, but you're reaching a broader audience. With both the Facebook ads and Twitter ads, you're able to target, you know, a core demographic and people that will be interested in your company or your product. So you can target by interests, you can target by, you know, gender, demographics, location, et cetera, so that you're really reaching out to the people that, you know, may not know that you exist and or know that you are on social media in a very meaningful and paid way that's better than and can be more successful than just a regular advertisement display ad, et cetera.
Right, and I'll throw in one that I think is just really super low-tech as well, which is just watching the Twitter feed for your brand and who is retweeting you, and if they're in your space, if they're a customer, you know, trying to harness them. I think, you know, super low-tech way of just trying to find a few early entrants into the field. So comment from me. Okay, Lauren, I got one for you from Brian Angelo in the GoToWebinar control panel. He asks, you know, are there defined roles within a given community? And if so, you know, what are they? So can you talk a little bit about roles that people play? And I think Mark and Rob, if you've got something to add to this, that'd be great too. Lauren?
Yeah, sure. Roles within a community. I think that, you know, from a brand perspective, there's always the leader of the community. So the one who's, you know, driving the conversation, guiding the conversation, et cetera. I think there's a moderator. So there's someone who's, you know, monitoring the conversation, responding to customer service issues, responding to positive comments, making sure the conversation keeps flowing and that everyone is interacting with each other. Then, you know, there are the advocates who are really excited about the company, that are talking positively about the company, spreading the word, and who can also influence other people as well. And then, you know, there are the lurkers, as we've talked about as well, the people that just want to listen to what's going on in the community and don't necessarily have anything to add or are waiting for the right moment to add as well.
And Mark or Rob, anything to add to that?
Uh, This is Mark. I'm going to give a different spin on this answer, so it'll maybe apply to a different subset of people here on the call today. We were building a community in the education space, and one thing that was a big question for these communities, these smaller communities that were being built in classrooms all across the U.S. was, and even internationally, was what is the role of the teacher? Now, what is the role of the students? And we identified different ways for those teachers to participate. So the big takeaway on this is identify, you know, for the person maybe coming in, you know, what are the roles that they can take, especially, you know, are they going to be a moderator? Can they attain moderator status or something along those lines? But sticking to this specific instance, what we did is we let the teachers know that this is really a space for their students and not for the teacher. The teacher's there to observe. The teacher's there to make sure that everybody, you know, is at least being civil to each other. But beyond that, let that community thrive amongst the students. We saw massive, incredible results as a result of letting it thrive and not having that person step in, but really take a back seat and let the community drive on its own. So that was just one example. But in maybe a more broad example is, you know, again, what role are people playing in that community can depend on, do you have somewhat of a ranking structure, right? And people, a couple of examples I've used already, selmoz.org, they'll use this specific ranking structure that you get by answering, you know, in participating within the community. You can move up in somewhat stature, somewhat. So, and then, you know, in other communities, you can even promote some of these extremely active folks into moderators or even super moderators. So it all depends on, you know, what your engagement type is and potentially, you know, what levels can people attain. I do know that, you know, mentally we're kind of attached to the point of, you know, gosh, I'd really like to get to XYZ level. I don't know, I'm type A. So, I mean, it's always like, you know, how many thanks am I getting and how can I engage more?
Right, Rob, we're getting a little low on time, so I'm just going to ask, we're going to go into like a speed question round. I'm going to try to get through some of these other questions here. Rob, specific question for brand advocates. Does it work if you're selling an artist rather than a product?
If you're selling a what rather than a product?
An artist. I guess promoting an artist, yeah.
Oh my God. I mean, brand advocates are willing to recommend anything. Artists, venues, you know, concerts, you know, new songs on iTunes, you know, just about anything. In fact, the advocates that we're empowering through Zuberance are recommending everything from fish tacos to fitness franchises, antivirus software. You know, so I think it was said earlier, just ask. To go out and ask your customers who's likely to recommend you and then give them the tools to recommend you and they'll do it. So yeah, it works across just about every category that you can think of.
Right. And just be sure to use the two words that never go out of style, thank you, right? I thought that was a really good quote, too. Lauren, question for you, I guess maybe even a question for the whole group. Is there a, and this is from Alexis Smith in the GoToWebinar Control panel, is there a specific budget range that we should be thinking about for social analytics? Is it a piece of a budget? How do we budget for this?
That's a good question. I think, you know, it depends on business needs as far as budget goes. If you're specifically, I don't know if the question is specifically referring to the tool I mentioned earlier called social analytics or if it's, you know, the ad buys that I was mentioning before.
Yeah, I think it is around the tool because it does specifically mention that tool.
Yeah. So for social analytics, it of course depends on, you know, your business needs and what else you need. To go along with it, it is part of Adobe Social, so it's fully integrated into that tool. So with the listening component that is of social analytics, there's also, you know, a moderation aspect of the tool, publisher, application builder, and then of course there's the Sitecat integration, Site Catalyst integration, which is your link tracking through to ROI. So depends on business needs and what different aspects of the tool you need to use.
Yeah, Alexis, I think the answer is it depends, right, on every company's budget. But
unfortunately.
Well, I don't know about you guys, but I had a great time on today's webinar. Thank you so much. And I'd like to thank our sponsor, Adobe, Adobe Social, the only solution to simplify social marketing within a common platform. So thanks to you guys today. And looking forward to next week. There'll be another webinar. Unfortunately, I will not be moderating that one, but I'll be with you on future webinars around, you know, what's coming up next. So I'll be on the webinar listening, but I won't be moderating because I'm interested in what's going to happen next year. So thank you all very much, and we'll see you next time.